Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast, where myself, Stephen Goldsworth, and Gareth Barker are joined in the studio tonight by some familiar faces. Been a while since you've been in the studio. Familiar voices to people, maybe, perhaps. If you can hear Richard Mason, that is. Do you want to say hello, Richard?
Hello, you all right?
Figure out how much we need to turn that microphone up, Gareth.
I've got it on full white and everything. It's not going to...
That's got to be loud enough now, surely.
It's just
Richard, I'm sure when the mics come on, your voice goes lower, Richard.
I'm going to add a
bit of bass to it. It's a subconscious thing. How are we branding you now, Richard?
The colour's what you want, really. It's called a symbol.
A symbol, formerly known as the Northern Echo journalist, Richard Mason. Interesting. Nick Barnes, been a while since you've been in the studio. You've been helping us out with live shows and stuff, of course. So, happy?
Oh, delirious. Didn't you call Richard Whispering Richard?
Whispering Richard Mason, yeah.
I like that. Whispering Richard Mason.
Is that what would go on his T-shirt if he was on a stag do? And you had those, like, naff T-shirts.
The only danger is, of course, you get lots of complaints like the BBC did about mumbling.
I've been on two stag do's, Richard, have I? Two?
Yeah, two.
Two?
Possibly, yeah, two.
Including your own? It was both of yours.
I've been on three, and see, because we're sort of obviously high-class individuals, we don't have the mawkish T-shirts that lads have nowadays. It's very much, much more of a sophisticated affair.
Yeah, no, it's completely bare-chested, yeah.
But we didn't have anything to write on ourselves, you see, so it was just you know what?
Scratched it on the bare skin.
Wow. That didn't happen. None of
Blood
those
brothers.
Things happened. We just went and enjoyed ourselves and came home.
Unlike the weekend, the football, getting back
for
that.
Any week,
yeah.
For that matter.
I mean, you said on Into the Light, Gareth, you thought Sunderland would stay up. Have you changed your opinion on that a little bit now?
Possibly. it's mainly because the results
elsewhere.
The results
of the teams are capable of winning
weren't great.
This exact date last year, we were actually 6 points better off than we are now. We had played a couple more games at that point, and we're going to go more into that on Into the Light, and we're going to have a look, see where we've been in each of the last four seasons and stuff like that. But I mean, Nick, that's two games. So considering or assuming. I don't know why on earth anyone would assume this, but you're going to get 6 points in the next two games. That only drags your level to last year when Sunderland were one place outside the relegation zone and off the back of a 1-1 draw with Southampton. And we seem miles away from that, don't we?
Too far away. My head's saying down. My heart would like to say that they can still pull off a miracle. But just looking at the start facts, the reality of it all, they haven't scored in the last three games. They've got 11 games left. They've got to win probably every other game. They've still got to go away to Arsenal. They've got to go away to Chelsea. They've got to play Manchester United. They've got to go away to a rejuvenated Leicester. They've got to play a rejuvenated Swansea at home. Burnley, who have been a little bit like in the past, Millwall and Hull as their sort of nemesis in a season. It always seems to be a season when they play these teams in the FA Cup, they turn out to be teams that they don't seem to be able to beat, and Burnley could well be that team this season. And I just think it's asking too much of them.
And even injuries coming back, people come back from injury. It's
clutching at straws, because let's assume that Kirchhoff comes back in for the Burnley game. We've seen already this season it takes him 2 to 3 games to get up to anywhere near speed, and he's so injury prone, I just fear that he may well yet again. It's almost like his injury problems are chronic, and you do wonder why is that the reason he didn't play many games at Bayern Munich when you look back at his record there, knowing what talent and technical ability he's got. You do start to wonder why he didn't play more games at Bayern Munich, and now we've seen him at Sunderland, you know, this summer and this season. He's just barely been on a football pitch. And so you'd have to worry about his effectiveness coming back. The optimism showed by David Moyes in saying that this break now before the Burnley game might get Anichebe back, might get him Katamol back. It's That's by a long stretch of the imagination, optimism, because he was only saying on Friday that he's looking at a month minimum before Anichebe and Katamol are back, and he would hope that might be the case. But even that, he said, was being very, very hopeful. So I don't even see those two coming back much before the end.
At the same time, we've only got two games probably before April. Well, we've got one game before April because we've got Watford right at the start of April, haven't we, at 1st of April. So I guess the run of games we've got coming up next will define our season. In we've got Burnley, Watford, then Leicester, and then Manchester United. I think if you can just isolate the fact that Sunderland have got 11 games left, we've got to play. I know you were saying the teams have got to play. I've stated before and other stuff we've done. I don't think it's such a bad thing that we've got Chelsea last game of the season because it's kind of out the way, isn't it? And if it gets that far, then
you'd rather play them on the last day than play them three games.
Exactly. So we could still, if we're out of it by then, it don't matter anyway. So we've got 8 of the bottom 10 to play. So if we get some players back, you don't know. And we've sat here. Well, it's actually nearly 4 years exactly to the day since we started the show. It was the 7th of March 2013. So. And that was, we were probably having the same conversation.
It's our fault that Sunderland are bad, because we were right before then.
I mean, we were worried about relegation.
The bad luck started then, wasn't it?
I mean, it was almost like this. It's almost like this week we're talking about, and it's almost like the Martin O'Neill level of sleepwalking apathy, and the catastrophic levels of the following, well, the previous two or three seasons that we've had, in terms of we look dead and buried, but we always get out of it. Now, I'm not saying that. That's going to happen this time.
That's the heart strings. I mean, that's me. That's me thinking, yes, look, they've done it before. And as impossible as it looks at the minute, that might still happen again this season. But I'm worried in the sense that the Everton game, I just felt after the New York trip and the so-called bounce that we're going to get from that, if that was the best they could offer against an Everton team that weren't playing their best and Robles didn't have a save to make, then I think you do have to look at it and say, right, they then used that energy against Manchester City, who ran them off the pitch, and they worked hard and they had chances, but they didn't score again. Even Huddersfield managed to score against them at the Etihad. They didn't score. They haven't scored against Everton. They haven't scored against Southampton. They need to find goals from somewhere. You wonder where they're going to come from. At the same time, they're almost guaranteed to concede a goal in games. When they go a goal behind, they don't look like they're strong enough to get back and win games.
My worry, Richard, is just building on what Nick's just saying there, is that in previous seasons, you always had a feeling that there was an extra gear for those Sunderland sides to go into, particularly when Poyet was there, I think. That was a massive season where we when he got sacked and Advocaat come in, I thought it was a massive season where we underperformed. I thought we were a lot better than that. As Nick's just alluded to there, the comfortable manner in which both Everton and Man City have just swatted this side away, and you can't even say that the players weren't put it in. You can't blame the lack of application for it. And I keep using the boxing analogy. It's like a boxer who's technically superior to his opponent. He's got a longer reach and he just stays behind the jab all match, knowing that if he doesn't do anything stupid, he's going to get a comfortable points victory. And that's a worrying place to be at, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you look at old seasons, you look at, 4 years ago when they managed to stay up first time round and keep repeating it, and you kind of think, well, which one is this most like? And this is a bit more like the Gus Poyet first season when he was saying we need a miracle. Well, I think he used the word electric shock at the time. Then we had Conor Wickham coming into form and kind of shooting to safety, but you just can't see anything like that happening again. I mean, the players that you'd usually rely on over the years to get you out of the trouble, the likes of Seb Larson, Lee Catamull, John O'Shea, just don't have the same influence over the team that they once did. And the players that are coming back from injury, as Nick said, you can't rely on those to provide the catalyst to get out of the trouble. It's just it's all added up over the years. It's all amounted up. And I think, as Gareth said in previous weeks, we're going to have to take our medicine with this.
Indeed. What are you on your phone now for? Are you looking for interaction? Have you switched off already?
So, well, I was looking at. We'll come in with some of the questions later. I was just seeing if there was any that I could slot into the discussion at this point rather than going back over old ground later in the programme. So thanks for making us explain that to listeners. Okay. That's thought, delightful, you know, for them, I'm sure.
If they put up with us for this long, then I'm sure that won't make a difference. Who is the Nick in this side? Who Richardson? He doesn't think anybody looks capable of coming to the fore. I mean, it's Defoe again yesterday with that chance he fashioned for himself and he hit the post. I don't know what people think of Barini's attempt.
I think it was poor, Barini's attempt, but I'm thinking, why didn't he take it on his... He dived to head it. Why didn't he... He had time to take it on his foot and try and place it. But that's Barini at the minute, isn't it? He's just not at the races at the moment. But I think at the moment... But is Barini going to be the Conor Wickham, as Richard referred to? Because at the moment, they haven't got anybody to come back from loan. They haven't got anybody to come back in and suddenly do what Wickham did the other year.
We haven't, but we'll bring this in now. So, Chris Thompson of The Love Supreme, who's been on here before on that, says, is it possible that for every minute Cavalry plays, another crease develops on Moyes' face? It would explain his absence. This is an elaborate segue into why Wabi isn't being picked and whether you think he should. So when we're talking about players who had large influence last season, who've kind of been, well, sidelined or... The one constant is that Kasri, for all people who say that he's looks unfit. I mean, I guess that's a purely subjective thing in some respects. He's been fit. He hasn't really been injured. He's been available, and even when he's looked to make changes to the team, so we see West Brom. He goes to West Brom and picks George Honeyman.
I think
leaves him out now. And the last three games where it's almost like when you play FIFA or something, and you think, oh, I should make some substitution. So you make a substitution and you bring the same player off for the same player at the same time in every game. He's brought Kasri on with 10 minutes to go in the last three games. It just doesn't seem as though there's any thought process behind that substitution. And it's a little bit like, well, go and do something in 10 minutes. Well, the game's gone. I mean...
But I think, you've said it there, the game had gone. I don't think Sunderland were going to get back into the game against Manchester City. And I think when they've gone 2-0 down at Everton, they're not going to get back in.
I mean, Kasri was waiting to come
either.
On. Was
the point you're making is that Kasri should be given a chance earlier in the game.
Well, even if it's not Kasri, if you're going to make the change, first it's 2 points here. If you're going to make the change, I was looking at the game yesterday, 65 minutes, I'm saying to my dad, he's got to do something here because he's got to try and... We're losing. We need points.
That was a criticism that Benno and I had at Everton, that Benno was crying out for the change to be made because he said Larson's dead on his legs, so there needs to be a change. But that change wasn't effected for another 10, 15 minutes. And when a change was made, you were expecting it to be Larson that came off and it wasn't. And so I think, you know, it is fair to criticise Moyes for his substitution policy. I don't think it's working.
But
the problem is Moyes, I don't think from the very start of his Sunderland career has liked Wabi Kasri. When he first met him and came across him in training in France, I think the thought that he was lazy has persisted with him. It's never got out of his head. And so Kasri for Moyes is one of those players that I think all managers seem to have their favourites and those that they don't like or don't perceive to have any influence or can have any influence. And Kasri happens to be David Moyes's bad penny.
We talked about this at the start of the season.
Like Martin Smith for Peter Reid. That's what he would say.
But we're looking at a player here who cost Sunderland £9 million or euros, whatever it was, back in January last year. And now... You know, we're in a situation where he's obviously bombed him out, like you say, because he doesn't like him. That's fine.
But he's presumably not seeing enough of him in training either.
But you say we're saying this, but if his opinion's already coloured, then it don't matter anyway, does it? He's not going to pick him. But I just think it's frustrating when...
I mean, we have a segment on Kasri every week, don't we?
Yeah, well, to be fair, I'm not saying that. I've liked him, and I think he's had enough change in the bank to be given an opportunity. Where, like other players, talk about players giving the ball away all the time, talking about a lack of work rate or effort. Well, you've seen that in people like Barini and in Yana's eyes. So it doesn't wash with me that. And yeah, when he's come on, it's almost like he's been trying far too hard to make something happen in the 10 minutes that he's given, and he's made a few mistakes. But he looked all right when he came on yesterday, not a world beater. But if you're going to make a change, give him a chance to try and influence the game. Give him a chance to try and make something happen, because otherwise it's just a complete waste of time.
Well, could I say, Nick, then, if not Kasri, why not Gooch?
Well, I think Gooch is...
The Gooch situation is different, but only because Gooch is just coming back from a 3-month layoff.
But even before he got injured, he seemed to fall out of favour a little bit, didn't
but
he?
But I think, yeah, but I understand why. I mean, I've spoken to Lyndon Gooch about this, and Gooch holds his hand up to it, and I don't think there's any. He admits himself something that Benno and I were picking up in games, and you'd have seen it, that Gooch was giving the ball away all the time. His bright start to the season, when he was a useful addition to the squad, was gradually falling away.
Well, he only had three games.
But he had a bad game at Queen's Park Rangers and then an even worse game against West Ham. And you could see then his confidence was getting affected. He was giving the ball away. He was getting caught in the wrong positions. And I spoke to Lyndon about this and he said, yes, that's absolutely fine. That's right. He had the injury and he's come back from that. And it's a case now of him getting up to speed again. He noticed he wasn't on the bench yesterday. He wasn't in the squad.
He's Honeyman, right? I don't want to you know, have a go at young lads, but see me. I mean, when you're talking about a player there who looks, when he's played, I mean, he did all right against West Brom, but he looks pretty out of his depth. And you look at someone like Gooch, who looks like he belongs, even though he's doing bad things at times. I don't think Honeyman, to be fair, looks like he belongs.
What I'm saying is there might have been a very good reason for Gooch not being involved. You're saying they might be injured. I don't know what the situation with Gooch is.
Well, we'll see if he plays tonight, won't we? But I don't think there's any point having a player. It's to start him in the first game of the season and then to get the stage where he's struggling with injuries and you get him back and then he's not even involved. You know, he's been back for a while as well. He's been back for a good 3-4 weeks, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. So, but then he's used Honeyman, I think, probably because he's more right-sided and he's tended to bring him on the right-hand side, and Gooch will play more on the left.
I think I'd have a lot more respect for Moyes if he gave Kasri a chance, at least a proper chance, you know, not 20 minutes, not 15 minutes. But
he doesn't even get that.
He doesn't even get that, so you can't even say, well, he's been given the chance and he's not taking it. You can't say he gives the ball away too much, because we haven't seen that in games. You know, training's a different kettle of fish. It's given him the game experience and, you know, give him a chance to stake his claim for a start.
I think it must be difficult. It's difficult as a player to be in a situation where you've influenced a side. You know, yeah, you could argue Kasri's probably, of the three players we signed last year, aside from Ndoye, he was probably the least popular, maybe. But you can't say that he didn't have an effect. Because
I thought he was sort of a bit... My impression of Kasri, you're right, he wasn't the most popular of the three Ks, but I think he always struck me as being a bit of a Steve Marbronk. He had more influence in home games, yeah, but disappeared in away games, which was Marbronk all over. He was a real player at the Stadium of Light. But when you put him into the team away from home, he seemed to merge and disappear into very bland, you know, what was Marbronk doing? And I think Kasri was that for me last season. Now, whether that's something that has been passed on to him as well from Sam Allardyce, who briefed Moyes on players and who he felt was a player, who he felt wasn't a player. You know, he advised Moyes not to sign Yedlin, and which probably was quite sanguine advice when you look at where Yedlin is in the pecking order at Newcastle now, where Vernon Anita is ahead of him. So if Yedlin's not making it as number one in a championship team, you know, was Allardyce right about him playing in a Premier League team?
On that note, would Billy Jones, Javier Manquillo or Donald Love start ahead of Vernon Anita? Probably not. So if you're going to... I guess, you know, this is an argument and discussion we've had before. If you're going to have to sign a body, at least bring somebody in who's knows the team. You can build on it rather than rip and replace everywhere. But, you know, we have ripped and replaced and replaced.
Although I think
rubbish,
we have to still remember that the transfers in the summer were coloured by who and what they could afford under the restrictions they're actually working under. So while they would have liked to have brought in a right back and preferentially a centre back and a left back, his priorities became other areas of the pitch and what they could wheel and deal in terms of.
Where did we bring in?
There were still questions though. For Kabul's transfer fee going out, letting Lens leave. These are questions, I think, fair questions that you could ask the manager, yeah?
And I think, but again, I think those transfers are probably coloured by, I think the Kabul one was coloured by.
I find it hard to believe in a Premier League side wouldn't have held out for more than £3.5 million for Kabul. That, I can't get my head around that at all.
I'm not sure. The Kabul one's always mystified me, full stop. I'm not sure.
I don't think he's done that well there, to be fair.
No, he hasn't. But I just think popular. It was a strange one. But I think, again, at the time, it was a judgment made and was probably flawed with hindsight.
Well, I guess you could argue, you know, you look at the injuries he's had and maybe they thought, well...
I think that was part of it and the part of his desire to get back in, to live in the South and so on and so on. But I think, you know, I think sometimes the judgment was maybe a little bit flawed in that whole decision-making process. But I think a lot of things were then coloured by what was happening with Kone, and that seemed to have a detrimental effect in more ways than one. I think the Kone situation, that whole farrago with Everton and Kone, you know, basically downing tools and agents getting involved, I think that actually meant that everyone took their eye off the ball when it came to the sort of overall picture about the squad.
I just think, you know, we finished season... We see it every year, don't we? We finish and we're like, he's where we kick on. But there was something genuine about it last year. However, you do feel like, you know, what's that game? It's a kaplunk where you pull the straws out and everything collapses. And you almost feel like just by the couple of tweaks that he's made, you know, I don't want to bang on about him Villa again, but by not bringing players in like that, letting Kabul leave, that kind of the straws being pulled and it's all just collapsed.
Though, did he?
No, he didn't. But I mean, someone
made the summer, didn't he?
Yeah, but in the summer. But the point was in the summer. He wanted to come, but Rubin Kazan wanted the $7 million up front. They wanted that chunk of money up front. Well, Sunderland didn't have that chunk of money to give Rubin Kazan. They offered $1 million to Rubin Kazan because he only had 6 months left on his contract, but they weren't interested in taking that money. They would rather have sat and let him see his contract out. In fact, they offered him another one than take $1 million when they were demanding seven. And this is the whole problem. I think there's been a mystified, you know, people are mystified as to why. They then sign on Dong and Djilibodji for the fees that they're quoted, but they haven't paid those fees. Those fees are incremental, if you like, and so they've only paid them. You know, they've paid the million they'd have paid for. Yeah.
Don't depress us all by reminding us we owe £8 million for Djilibodji.
I've got a question for or a discussion point for Nick and Richard, really, because obviously Richard was recently in the Northeast press. Seen suggestions
before
today,
he turned his back on. Yeah, before on the, he turned on the, his back on the profession.
And obviously Nick's there all the time and that. So, you know, I've seen some comments today from, you know, some sort of writers on various websites.
Some sort of writers.
Suggesting that David Moyes gets an easy ride from the press, that people don't ask him questions like, why aren't you...
Nick.
..playing? Why aren't you playing Kasri? Or why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And there's a lot of... Why, do you think that's a fair criticism?
Yeah, it is, and I'll tell you why. Because David Moyes, as soon as the microphone's turned on, becomes a completely different beast. Well, what he tells us off the record is why he's not playing Kasri, why he's doing this, why he's doing that. As soon as the microphone goes on, he becomes defensive. He becomes a manager who thinks you're trying to trip him up, trying to catch him out, and he automatically becomes... you know, very much on the defensive. So he's Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, the almost literal sense with
Man United in Spain. Is that?
And so you
like
have to be.
I mean,
I think, you know, I'm a bit circumspect with him now. I know that as soon as I turn the microphone on, I'm not going to get a great deal out of him. I have to, you know, my way of working, I suppose, is to get my information from him off the record. What I get from him on the microphone is not of no great value, really, in the greater scheme of things. The information of value is given off the record, where he seems willing to give it, but he doesn't like the microphone. I mean, I upset him yesterday because I said that Manchester City gave Sunderland the runaround. He was, even though he was, you know, angry at that, didn't like that, and so immediately starts giving you shorter answers. So you know, in one sense, if you start prodding and asking the questions about why aren't you playing Kasri, you'll get one word, two word answers, you'll get nothing from him, and you probably won't get anything off the record then.
Is he happy here long term? Is he in it for the long term?
I don't think he's... I mean, he will say he's happy because he's managing a football club, and But then, you know, you're getting semantics here. He'd probably be happier if he was at a club that was sitting 5 points above the bottom three and he knew they were going to be in the Premier League next season.
His CV at the moment's not going to get him a job like that.
No, so I think, you know, he's over a barrel in one sense that if he wants to convince everybody that he's a tenable manager at this level or at the Championship level, he's got to stay with Sunderland
stuck,
and see
he?
The job
stuck
through.
With each other, you feel like. Almost.
They are, effectively. And I think he's also got an ally in Martin Bain. Martin Bain and he go back a long way. They're good friends. They're almost the counterbalancers to each other at the minute. I think David Moyes' position would be a lot weaker if Martin Bain wasn't the chief executive.
I think it's a slightly bizarre situation that Sunderland are in the most grave league position that they've been in for the last 4 years, yet they're probably the most stable they've been in for the last 4 years. You've got, you know, stability at the top in Martin Bain and also David Moyes, and you think maybe if they do go
as long
down,
as that is stability, because I guess, you know, it's all well and good saying, right, we can't sack another manager, and we can't. I'm still not having the idea of that. It seems like an appealing one to me at all. But if you have a manager who, for instance, thinks, well, if we go down, I'm walking, then you almost think, well, you might as well start looking now and building.
Well, that is a fear, but
we need somebody
long term. I just don't get the impression that Moyes is going to do that. I don't think David Moyes is going to walk away from it, because I think he feels this is another project like he had at Everton. If he can rebuild this football club, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying Martin Bain's so important. While Martin Bain is at the football club and rebuilding the football club, David Moyes will still be the manager, because those two, you know, they're almost interlinked. I think there is a symbiotic relationship between the two of them, and while one's there, the other will still be there. And I think that, you know, that's ultimately what their, you know, David Moyes' ambition will be to do, is to rebuild it in the mould of Everton as he did when he first went in there. And I think you have to bear in mind as well, I mean, I agree with you, you can't keep changing managers. And I think you have to remember that this season, that Sunderland, to be where they are going into this weekend's games, only 3 points from safety, was a miracle in itself. Because I think at the beginning of the season, when we were wondering where the first result was going to come from, there was a genuine fear that Sunderland could go down with fewer points than Derby County. So the actual fact that he's engineered as many points as he has is, in a way, a mini miracle.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think he's at the stage of his career now. He's still a young manager. But where would you see him going if he was to walk away after this season? Where would he go to? He can't walk into any of the Premier League clubs, so you could see this as a real project to build something. And you know, he's young enough to still have that hunger, surely.
Well, we're going to continue to talk after this.
That's just in case there's adverts in, because people have been saying we get cut off in the middle of conversation, we always forget to put a little break in. So you might just had the
before the mics went on, the star Gareth was like, you'll have to mention the segment, and I was like, we don't do segments in this bit, it's not into the light, we just ramble for like 30-35 minutes if we can.
Well we've done 27, so that break is it, we're going to have to go on for a good 13 to 15
it's
minutes,
almost disrupted.
At least.
It's disrupted the flow of things a little bit.
Well, that's, you know, that's a price you pay.
You've just got to be professional, yeah. Haven't you?
I haven't seen a penny of advertising money, by the way. So if you listen here, Cast, where's my money? You know, you won't be, because you know you've got thousands of podcasts on there. So you know,
this will be the day that they'll choose to tune in.
Yeah,
okay, and drop you. Okay.
We need quality control.
Where there won't be any segues or segments next week. It'll be seamless. because he'd been dropped.
Talking about stability of the club, and again, this is something we're going to discuss later on the week, Gareth, on Into the Light, because there's no game to preview, so we need to come up with we need to do a little bit of research, so we've got a short fill because there's a contract it? That one, yeah. what's the guy? I totally lost my train of thought. Right, stability. As I said, I'll discuss this later on the week. What do you feel, Nick, about... We're talking about how there's a feeling of stability almost now, at least, where there wasn't before. I keep saying it. It's the least worried I've been about getting relegated in the last three or four seasons. I think because of some of the younger players there, because the financial situation we already have, potential transfers as well. A couple of the players who might leave for big fees. I don't know if that's just me being deluded.
I know... where you're coming from. I think this relegation could be more painful than had it been two or three years ago, only on the basis that already, and it's not related to relegation, the club is shedding jobs. They're streamlining, they're going through quite a painful shrinking process, if you like, to turn it back into a football club, which I always think, okay, you know, in the long run, that is, you know, for the betterment of the club, but it's a painful process, and that's why they're still in the Premier League. And you've got to bear in mind now, if they get relegated, that process could see it shrink even further.
You would imagine they've got relegation in mind when they started this.
I think possibly to a degree, but I think a lot of it is this realignment of the football club to get away from. And this was always on the cards. This was on the cards in August, even before a ball had been kicked. That the concerts, the involvement in Africa, the periphery, all the operations that go on around the football club on the periphery, which didn't really have a direct impact on the football operation, that was always going to be a case where there was going to be that streamlining, if you like. So there could well follow further shrinkage, if you like, if they get relegated. But my biggest fear is that the Championship now is so competitive, as Newcastle have shown.
It's a full of quality, though.
It's not. No, it's not. But it's not.
Brighton, who were...
But that's why it's competitive.
Who everybody thought were the best team, even until Newcastle beat them.
Even Newcastle, with the quality they're perceived to have in that squad, only now, coming into March and April, are showing that it's starting to tell. So Sunderland are going to go down, if they go down, with a squad that, as you say, you're going to lose all your big players. You're going to have to rely on players like Hunneman, who Gareth is, is probably not good enough.
The big players, Cornier, Pickford.
We'll go Defoe.
But that's, who else? Because he doesn't play Kasu anywhere. So Barini.
Well, Kasu will go. No, he doesn't anyway.
Barini wouldn't be a miss, the form he's in.
No. So if you could bring you're in only talking for, about if, six, seven players going.
Yeah, but if,
who you've got to replace.
Mm-hmm. Well, And
on top of that, Mannone will be another one who probably go because his wages are so high. And I think it means you've got to get another keeper in. You've got to get.
You've suddenly got money, though, haven't you? If you think about some of these players who are leaving, you're going to get big transfers.
You'll get big transfers in, but then you've also got to bear in mind, against that backdrop of all that money coming in, you've got to make sure you're getting rid of all the wages that are causing all the problems for FFP at the minute. So there's still a balancing act to play next season in terms of who you bring in, who you've paid off, where you've got your wage bill down to, and where you're going to keep the level of wages that you've got coming in. You've got players coming up out of contract, Billy Jones, Seb Larson, and so on and so on. So it's going to be a major rebuilding of the football team in the summer if they go down.
The funny thing is, if we stay up, everyone always talks about it having to be a major rebuild anyway. But
the point I'm making is that in the Championship next season, you're going to... Yes, you'll get all the parachute payments, you'll have all the money, you can rebuild the squad. But you also have a look, you've got a competitive top six or seven in the Championship who are experienced now at playoffs, getting into those situations, your Sheffield Wednesdays, your Huddersfield Towns, Leeds United, Aston Villa will probably be there or thereabouts next season, Norwich City will probably be there or thereabouts. There's going to be a lot of teams in a similar, now will be neck and neck with you. So the guarantee of going straight out again is less than it was 8 years ago or 10 years ago when Roy Keane did it and threw money at it in January.
Having said that, though, we went down with the worst team in the history of the Premier League or whatever, if you want to say that. But we did. It took two seasons to get back up there, and we finished third in the first season, then lost in the playoffs. second season he won the league.
And there's a pull, isn't there? Because it's flipping it on its head as well. Sunderland are a big pull at that level. And we've mentioned before, you know, we're heavyweights in that division. Myself and Gareth have discussed on previous shows all the relegation specials we have and stuff like that, that using the Premier League as a reference point. When Peter Reid took Sunderland to the Premier League for the first time in 1996, they've only been at that level 5 seasons. They've won the league 3 times and finished 3rd twice.
That's in 20 years.
So
22 years.
That's you know, those are now, of course, accounts for nothing necessarily.
We've been in various different positions when we've gone into that league where, you know, under Reid it was slightly different, but we had a terrible start under Peter Reid. We had a terrible start not under Roy Keane, but obviously we lost to Bury.
McCarthy lost his first couple as well.
Yeah, I remember losing to Millwall.
I'm painting the worst case scenario. I think, you know, the worst case scenario, they could be down for a couple of seasons. I don't think, you know, it's unlikely that they would be in a situation like that you were saying with Mick McCarthy that time when they lost in the playoffs to Palace and then the following year they went up. That wouldn't surprise me.
I think fans will probably take that, though. I think they're realistic enough not to demand that we go down there and win the league.
But there's no substitute for the experience of those teams that have been in it year. I mean, like, you know, as we talk about Sunderland being in the Premier League and becoming a Premier League club over 10 years, well, they haven't made a good fist of that. You know, every year they've just hung on at the end of it. Likewise, the experience they've had and hanging on at the end of it is commensurable to those teams in the Championship who year in, year out are there or thereabouts. I've met, you know, Sheffield Wednesdays, the Leeds, those teams that are always in the top 10 because they've got experience of that division.
I just think, ironically, from a playing staff perspective as well, I don't know what you think, Richard, but it's ironic that we are complaining about our centre midfield at the moment, saying how that's possibly the weakest area on the pitch and it's really costing us. Ironically, I think if we go down, that would probably be one of the strongest, one of our strengths, because we could keep a nucleus of people like McNair and Dong.
Well, I think they'd keep Kirchhoff as well, if they can keep him fit.
People like that, suddenly, you're using that as a platform to build on, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a young, exciting team that would go down with. The key is to hit the ground running once you get down there, because you can get sucked in. If you don't get the momentum straight away, it could be a long old time down there. You know, when Middlesbrough went down in 2009, they stayed there for 7 years before they came back up again. And whereas Newcastle have managed and look like they're going to do it again to come back up straight away, I don't know whether that would be the case with Sunderland. I don't know whether the damage is a lot deeper than it has been before. So although they have finished, you know, higher than third in the last, 22 years.
But I think Richard made a point there. I think it's quite a good one. It's like, you know, Aston Villa, I think we assume would be in a position where they'd have been competing to come straight back up, but they haven't been because they've been so badly damaged by the 3 or 4 years leading up to their relegation.
And it's they have the same nucleus of players, though.
And
they've kept a lot of the players.
Yeah.
But then they've gone and spent 150 million quid.
Yeah, trying to get back up.
But, I mean, I think the thing about relegation is, I think it's the only true measure of failure in football, and that's why it's so painful. It's rubber stamped that you have failed. You're in that. I mean, success is relative. People can say, oh, it's been a successful season for them because really they're a team that should be finishing 13th or 14th, but they finished 8th. Relegation is failure, and it's a really tough blow. But once you get over that, you'd be looking forward to the season again. It's a fresh start. It's new. And you go through that process every year when we stay up and you think it's going to be different this year, and it never is. You think, oh, it'll be different next time, and it never is. And I'm not saying that it'll be better or worse for whatever reason if we get relegated, but, you know, watched the Newcastle Huddersfield game, and for a football perspective, I mean, it was pretty, like, ridiculous, really, at times, like some of the mistakes that you see in some games in the Championship. But look at they were panning across and looking at the Newcastle fans and big away end, and they're all, you know, jumping up and down, singing and having a good time. And yes, Newcastle fans are a bit simpler and less sophisticated than Sunderland fans, so they're probably happy with that. But at the same time, you know, you look back to when, you know, when we went to Barnsley under Keane and won 2-0, and there was 7,000 there. Wigan under Mick McCarthy, Marcus Stewart scoring 1-0, 7,000 there.
And Hull, I mean,
we've added up those games as well.
You know, and all those, you know, and when you're down there, and if you're doing well or you're winning, it doesn't matter what division you're in because you're happy, you're enjoying it. And I think once you get over the pain of of relegation. I'm not, you know, it sounds as though I'm just trying to, I'm sort of mentally preparing
for
it.
Well, yeah, we're all there.
I don't think
there's
anything wrong with that. I know what you're saying, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, like, if Sunderland get relegated, then you get over that initial pain, and then you look at you look optimistically at the future. But I think that, you do have to sometimes be a bit more pragmatic and think, look, they haven't got a God-given right to be that team that comes straight back up, because Leeds United, Sheffield Wednesday, Bolton Wanderers, Blackburn Rovers,
if they come up.
But Bolton Wanderers, look where they were, a solid Premier League team for 10 years plus, and look where they are now. So,
Blackburn and Bolton.
But the point I'm making is that, you know, all those clubs and all their supporters, when they got relegated, would have felt that, okay, look, we get over the relegation, we rebuild, and we come back up. And I think that applies, you know, to no bigger club than Leeds United. I mean, who would have believed that Leeds United would have been still out of the Premier League after all these years?
I mean, the
size of their club.
Their situation, though, was...
It was extenuating, because
the real financial problems that they had. I think the interesting thing as well, going back to David Moyes and his attitude, which has annoyed a lot of Sunderland supporters, understandably, some of the stuff he said, and his negativity. And now, there's a couple of arguments here, I think. One is, has David Moyes earned the right to be part of the plan and be the person who rebuilds the team? Because obviously they've earmarked that and decided that's what you're going to do. And it's almost like he's been told, regardless of whether you're in the Premier League or you're not at the end of the season, you're the man for the job. So,
but is that question irrelevant, though? Because he is the man. I mean, he's there.
So my point is, with his attitude next season, I think I'd be... If he starts saying, right, we're in this league and we're going to try and get promoted, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and then you might see different David Moyes, where he's been more trying to be more positive. He's got to be more proactive in trying to. It's a different battle, isn't it? And he's saying, right, my job here is to get. It's not. Or if you stay up, great. If you go down, then fair enough. It's you've got to get promoted, and if you don't, then you've kind of failed. And you might see a different David Moyes. And my point is, are people willing to accept that, or? You know, because if we go down and says, well, if he says what you're saying, where, you know, there's 10 clubs in this division that could be promoted, it's going to be tough. And,
I think any manager would.
It's how you phrase it.
But I think you've got to look at... I think there are certain things we have to accept. I mean, Stephen's, you know, touched on this, about this change. You can't keep changing managers. I think we have to accept, like him or loathe him, David Moyes is here and is not going anywhere. That's the situation at Sunderland Football Club.
Just
at the moment.
Breaking news here that he's been sacked.
The old famous Mick McCarthy, they won't sack me, and he's gone the following morning. But you have to accept that he is the manager. Martin Baines, the chief executive. They've got a blueprint. They've got a template. And if David Moyes follows the pattern he followed at Everton, then he will look to put into operation his plan will be to bring in younger players who have got a sell-on value in 4 or 5 years' time and build a team in the same way that he built a team at Everton when he brought in the likes of Leighton Baines, Seamus Coleman, Phil Jagielka, and those sort of players that actually then became well-established Everton players for a number of years. And in amongst those, they picked the odd gem, which they then sold on for a good deal of money, which allowed them to reinforce the squad yet again without having to make major changes to it.
I mean, here's another point, actually. If we stay up...
Which is what they...
But if we stay up, though, what can we do next season? Are we going to be in the same situation where we've got no money to spend, where we're scrabbling around? That, I think that is more depressing, because it's just a continuation of the problem and it's never going to cease. He's not in a position where he can bring in two or three players to better the squad like Allardyce was at the end of last season, where if he'd stayed, he probably would have signed a few players if he could, in quality players in certain areas. It's going to be, he's going to have to replace people like Pienaar, Anichebe, people like that who are either injury prone on short-term contracts or whatever it may be, or and these are players, you know, talking about Pienaar. Yeah, but he might, but we're talking about, but he's injured. He's been injured. I remember us actually coming into here once and I was saying, and each of these in great form at the moment, but it's inevitable that he's going to be injured and what we're going to do when we lose him, and we've basically haven't seen him since December.
I mean, it's a good question, because I think there are big issues there, because the big issue is about the perception of the football club in terms of attracting players to the football club again, if they think they're going to have to go through the
Are we going to attract the players, or are we going to have the money?
Yeah, I think there would be more money available, because there will be players off the wage bill, there will be players that are coming up out of contracts, won't be offered new contracts, and so on, which will give them more leeway to buy players. But you're right, I think there's the bigger problem is the perception of Sunderland if they stay up, as is it going to be yet another season where they're struggling to avoid relegation. So in one sense, relegation can actually be quite cathartic.
Let's feel like it's inevitable. You just kind of want to embrace it.
Would you rather go down and maybe have a bit of a clear out, be a big player in that league, try and rebuild a little bit, and then try and go up again and build on that? Or would you just rather
if you could guarantee,
stay up and...
I'd rather be... If you're there, stay there. I think that's the idea. I think if you don't want to risk the scenario that we've talked about, if you're in the Premier League, stay in it by hook or by crook.
But then that's been the mentality that's led us to this situation.
But that's the Premier League, isn't it? It's the Holy Grail, isn't it? I mean, for all the deficiencies and all the problems of the Premier League, everyone is still desperate to get there and stay there. And whatever way you look at it, if Sunderland go down, are you telling me that Sunderland fans are going to say, actually, I'm enjoying the Championship more, I'd rather stay here than get promotion? But you want promotion back to the top flight. You want to play at the best level of football.
But with that comes a season of winning games. It comes some, you know, moments. It brings...
It's the eternal hope, isn't it?
And I don't think this has always been the case. But I would suggest now that, for the reason like you touched on there, Sunderland have this reputation where they just go and get away with it by the skin of the teeth every year. You almost feel like a player would rather sign for a promoted club than somebody like that.
Which is exactly what's happened, because Ryan Mason, Alfie Mawson and so on, Mawson went to Swansea, but Mason went to Hull, you know, for that very reason, because...
He was going with a team that was on the up,
and also because he had Tottenham teammates there. But that was one very good reason for Mason signing for Hull and not Sunderland. Mm. And that was one reason why other players turned down Sunderland, because they felt they would rather go to a team which seemed to have more ambition and seemed to be on the up than one that was, as the perception is, amongst British players, not so much foreign players, that Sunderland is, in inverted commas, a failing club.
And if you could guarantee you would come up in a couple of years, it would be. I would rather do that, I think, personally, because you would get that positivity back. Yeah. But
you'll always remember that, you know, that when we came up the first under Keane, and it was when Chopra scored that goal against Tottenham. It was like all of the demons of the 19-point season,
nice to have a home game on the first season, day of the season,
which we could have next season if without the concerts. But that was like all the demons of those two seasons had been exercised. That's what it was. That's what it felt like. That when we scored that goal, I still remember it, and it was like the roof came off the place, and you know, last minute. And tell you what, we'll not get too far into the point, but there's a difference. That Keane team, how many points did we win in the last 5 minutes of the game? How many points does this team lose in the last 5 minutes of the first half?
Funny enough, 14 goals it is. Today, at how many times they've conceded within 7 minutes of half time, and. Going back, you're looking at Middlesbrough at home, Stoke at home, Chelsea at home, and then Everton away last week and Manchester City at home this week. Outside of that, they did concede goals, but it'd be 15 minutes from half-time and so on, so you can't really take... But there are five games this season...
It's 14 goals in either the last 5 minutes of the first half or second half.
And then I haven't even taken into account the second half. But I spoke to Seb Larson about it yesterday and said, look, you've clearly got a psychological problem.
I bet he felt great after that.
But as a team, they have a psychological problem. And he said, yes, we have. I mean, they clearly have, which is something they've got to address. It's an Achilles heel with them at the minute, because conceding not only just before half-time, but conceding in itself is causing Sunderland no end of problems. And Sam Allardyce identified that last season with his, you know, he always said, Sunderland have to score first. because they concede first, they've got to score two goals to win a game, and it's not they haven't got the capability.
That Middlesbrough game is going to be a belter, isn't it? Two teams who can't score any goals.
You wish we were playing.
I'm not going on because we're going on longer than we normally do. Yeah, but it's been quite good on it.
I'll do one more thing
okay. that I've just. So, generationally as well, it's interesting that we've been in the Premier League for 10 years. And there'll be people who probably start supporting Sunderland when they're 11, 12 years old, who are now 22.
We've not seen a win.
Who've not seen, exactly. Who've always known Sunderland to be Premier League. And that's going to be interesting to see how they respond, because obviously we're from a generation of people who are used to seeing Sunderland in the second division.
Are they the people that don't turn up when the gates drop down to 25,000?
Yeah.
Because where are those, where are they, you know, who is it, which group of supporters is it that disappear when you get a relegation from your crowds of 40,000, 43,000 down to 25,000, 30,000. There's a large number, that's a big percentage of people who disappear. And do they come back? I know plenty of people who the last relegation said, that's it, I'm not coming back. They haven't come back because they found better things to do with their Saturday afternoons.
Everyone's got better things to do with a Saturday afternoon. But even if you're winning at football matches, you've got better things to
do. Is the fact that the 43,000 crowds now, are they a result, as of what Stephen's saying, of the new generation of people that are coming along? And is relegation going to lose you that next generation? Mm. And you've got to start again with your crowds of 25,000 and build again.
I think younger people are more likely to steer and go, to be honest.
The fan culture's changed since going to away games and all that kind of thing.
Look how often we set out away games. Like, that didn't used to be the case, even when we had better teams than this.
I think Fleetwood away next season, you know, people will have to have about 50 points to get Fleetwood. So that'll be fun for them, won't it? That'll be a new ground to take off the list. Burton Albion in Fleetwood. Oh, dear. We'll keep some of the proper ones.
We'll save some of this Twitter interaction for Thursday because we have a shorter fill on Thursday.
Sent us proper ones, I'll not read them out, but here's some not proper ones. So from Paul, says, why are there seven... That's SR5, Paul. Not only one Paul in the world. Why are there seven Greggs in the town centre?
Makes money.
Supply and demand.
Supply and demand.
Some of the products at Greggs are delicious. I will be at Greggs officialing them into this after this, so and see if they can send some. They sent you some stuff, didn't they? Once
the chicken wrap things are lovely. I think I'm addicted to those.
Sorry, what was that?
Official friend of Greggs.
So at Greggs official, I'll be tweeting you.
That was one of the greatest things I ever got. Actually, a £20 Greggs voucher for Christmas one year.
Do you know what?
From Greggs.
Actually, one of the blokes at work was saying how his wife. Every morning goes to Greggs and gets a bacon sandwich and a coffee. So for Christmas, he thought, oh, he's a thoughtful present. I'll get her a £30 Greggs gift voucher as an additional present. She wasn't happy. See, I think that's a great present. It's practical. But anyway, so why are you, Mrs. asked, does Moisey's fear of subs stem from an incident in a branch of Subway, maybe 12-inch related? Any answers to that one? And one more.
We'll save the proper questions.
Yeah, we'll see the final one we'll read out from Neil at the White Cafe, who's in Malaysia at the moment. He says, a Malaysian guy in bar last night saying, Porterfield, a la David Coleman at me at full time when I was pissed off with the lads. So, an international brand, if you're listening, Sunderland. Malaysia, there's your next point of interest. Get yourself out there.
I wonder if we lose a lot of the American followers we've picked up in the last couple of years if we go down, because they'll not be able to watch the games.
Yeah, good luck getting a stream in the Championship.
Exactly. We're going to have to actually make sure that our guests have been at the away games as well.
We'll have to, like, go.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll be back on Thursday for Into the Light, where we will be looking at previous seasons and discussing...
And answering your proper questions.
Answering your questions and stuff like that. We'll have a thinker, because we do have a shorter fill. Thanks for listening.
You're really building it up.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's basically album filler. Come and enjoy it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.